How many times has this happened to you? You said, what I need is a great podcast on books. Well, it's here. Chatter on Books, and it starts right now. I'm Jamie McIntyre, your part-time announcer, and here's your full-time host, Tori Clark.
Okay, I'm Tori. This is Chatter on Books. We've had a great show for 15 minutes now, which really wasn't part of the show.
It would have been great if you could have heard it.
It's the Green Room show, yeah.
That's right.
Those who are members of Patreon, they'll be able to hear some of it. So if you're not a Patreon member, sign up today, patreon.com/chatteronbooks.
This is like getting deleted scenes from, you remember when we had DVDs and they would come with deleted scenes?
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
Streaming has ended that. We don't have deleted scenes anymore.
It's true.
Okay, on another show, I want to talk about all these shows that are about con artists. And there are great cons among authors, too. So that's for another show. So we have the award-winning Claude Jennings doing all the important work. We have David and Jamie back. And just a little bit, we're going to be talking to Gary Tange, who's a really interesting guy. David, do you know him? Do you know of him?
I know of him.
So Boston sports broadcaster dude.
I mean, I'm sure I've been in a clubhouse or a locker room with him at one point or another. Sure.
Seems like a really fun guy. Seems to have a great voice. And he has a really fun book called The Arm in the Fall, which is kind of Elmore Leonard and John Grisham. And I don't know what else.
Can I tell you how annoyed I am by this book?
Yes, go ahead.
Because I wrote about 60 pages of a novel about a star quarterback who was murdered.
No.
Wow. And I know who did it, and I'm just trying to and I'm trying to figure out how I get that person, you know. I know how it ends. I wrote 60 pages on it, and it
Well, you can still do it, David. There are a lot of quarterbacks.
Everybody will say it's that I'm copying and it's derivative. And I started writing this this was like 2002. I mean,
you didn't share it with us, so we can't vouch for you.
Well, that's funny because I had the idea for the iPhone way before Apple, and I just never got around. It was on my list of things to invent, and I just didn't get to it.
You called it
the book, by the way. Tori also has a little Carl Hiaasen in it too.
Yeah, just definitely a little Carl Hiaasen, kind of wacky. Yes. Yeah.
Who I love. You guys know I love Carl Hiaasen.
He's the best. And it was one of his brother died in that horrible shooting
Correct.
In Annapolis.
He was an editor at the Annapolis Gazette. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. All right.
I would love to have Carl Hiaasen on at any time if we could ever get him to just talk about.
I might be mixing up some of my famous authors, but I think somebody who publishes Carl Hiaasen told me. He writes a book a year or something. You know, he's like Grisham writes a book a year. And he does 10 days of publicity. And it's not us. And that's it. That's all he needs to do. And that's good.
Which is weird because we're so much fun.
We're so much fun. Okay, I have an email. This is from our friend David. He knows who he is because he listens to the show all the time. And this was after the Lee Kravitz, The Last Confessions of Sylvia P. show. Mm-hmm. And he says, thank you again for another incredible podcast. I will be reading The Last Confessions of Sylvia P. and I just got The Bell Jar. Fascinating story. Cannot thank you enough for this book club, which is how some people refer to Chatter, which I really like. I have had at least 5 or 6 different people tell me they bought The Bell Jar after listening to that show with Lee Kravitz.
Cool.
And I said, well, that's good, but did you buy his book? And they're like, No.
Well, you spoke so eloquently about how he was, how the book moved him.
He really did.
Yeah, no, he was very good. Very good.
Really, really interesting guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm back from 4 days in Vegas. How is everybody else's Final Four holding up? Claude?
Oh, I didn't even do a bracket this year. I didn't do a bracket this year.
So I did a bracket this year. My final includes Gonzaga and Arizona, simply because I just wasn't brave enough to go anywhere else. But I did have Michigan getting to the Sweet 16.
Yeah,
I did have UNC beating Baylor, and I did have Duke getting to the Sweet 16. But I did everything else is garbage. Everything else is bad.
Jamie, so
you won't be winning any money. I'll just say that.
So you're not going to believe this, Tori, but this is true. My bracket is so far perfect. And you know what the odds are? of like getting all the way to an end with a
one in 10 gazillion.
It's you have a better chance of winning the lottery. But I had St. Peter's over
Kentucky
Baylor, and no, but what I do have to admit, I fill it out after the games. So that might have a
slight... It eliminates all of the guesswork, I think.
Yeah, but it's working out great for me.
So, so Claude, I had Michigan going to the Sweet 16, largely just emotional because Charlie went there.
Mm-hmm.
But there you go. They did pretty well. I have Duke winning it. And this is totally, Nigel and I talked about this. It's totally, you know, go with your heart, not your head. It's because of Coach K. I hate Duke. I absolutely hate Duke. And it's really hard to root for them, so I root for him. But I thought it was kind of a mixed bag this year, and you didn't have too many clear favorites. So I thought, oh, you know, good coach, emotional, maybe he makes it. But
so having gone to the University of Maryland for my graduate work, I was taught to hate Duke at an early age.
It's really, really easy to hate Duke.
But can I say one thing about the March craziness?
It's great.
The March Insanity, whatever they call it. So I was watching the North Carolina game, and of course it gets down to the last couple of seconds, which takes an hour and a half to play. And it's not that much fun actually watching the last minute and a half of a game when they play for 10 seconds and then there's 2 minutes of reviewing everything in slow motion. And then the officials review the call and then they make the wrong call. and then the announcers are debating how this is going to throw the game one way or another. And then it's just not that much fun. It goes on for like 15 or 20 minutes. And it just seems like they're no longer playing basketball. They're playing some other chess match game where they're working the clock and intentionally fouling the
David, your person. Thoughts?
I didn't think it was that much fun.
I totally understand that. It is a problem between timeouts, which coaches hoard so that they can call them at the end of the game. And then there are, last 2 minutes, there are a lot of replays because you want to get the call right. You know, if a ball's knocked out of bounds, you want to make sure it's the right team gets the ball. And it's a problem. I don't know that there's a solution for it because it's high stakes. It's big emotion. People want to win these games desperately. Even teams that normally, if you're down 10 points with 2 minutes to go in a game, you don't foul because, the game's pretty much over. But in these tournament games, everybody fouls when they're down 14, 15, 16 points with 2 minutes to go because they're just desperate to do anything. So
because there is just a slight outside chance that if everything goes your way, you could still somehow pull it out. And I also get I don't want my team to lose on a bad call that they didn't review because the other team touched the ball and went out of bounds. So I get that part, but it's just not as much fun. It's not.
It slows the game down.
Yeah.
And the TCU fans are very upset because there was a non-call at the end of regulation that clearly looked like a foul was committed against the TCU player and he would have shot free throws and they probably would have won the game, but didn't happen. So, but I get it. A lot of people have that same thought process or that same issue. But Tori, ask me where I was this weekend.
I know where you were, David. That was my next question. How was Michigan? You were in the big, it was so great.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. I saw my beloved AU Eagles play. We came up a little short against Michigan.
Just a teensy bit.
A little short. But it was great. What an experience. It was so great. The families were there and everybody. And I couldn't wait for them to play Hail to the Victors, which is just a phenomenal song. Yeah. It's a great song. And so it was wonderful to be in the tournament. And we enjoyed it. And we had a great time. And happy, happy, happy are we.
Yay. Where did you stay? Having stayed in a lot of hotels
I stayed at some Marriott derivative, like a town suites or something. Campus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Outrageously priced because of the weekend, or was it okay?
No, it wasn't. I actually used some of my Marriott points because I'm a total Marriott whore and I have like a million points.
Yeah.
And I wish I were kidding. I'm not. I used up some of my points this weekend and it was, when I looked online, the prices, I thought they'd be gouged out too. And they weren't.
Good for them.
There was very little signage or anything that said NCAA basketball tournament, next to nothing. Now they actually drew a good crowd. There was like 6,000, 7,000 there.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't sold out, but it was full. Lower Bowl was pretty close to all full. So it was nice.
Nice.
Sorry, I had a little brush with fame this week.
Were you at the Cherry Blossom Festival?
No, but I was out walking, doing our daily walk with my wife, Roberta, and we ran into our neighbor, Nancy, and she stopped and took her, you know, earbuds out of her ear, and she said, "Oh, I'm just listening to you on the podcast."
Oh, yes!
Listening to Chatter on Books.
That's a David Aldridge moment.
Broadcasting nice. And being on TV, I never run into somebody who was listening to me while I was out on the walk. So I got that going great. For me, which is kind of nice.
Awesome.
I thought you were going to say her last name was Pelosi, and I was going to go,
my neighbor Nancy. So hopefully when I run into her next time, she'll know that I mentioned her on the podcast.
So I had a David Aldridge moment of sorts in the airport, the Las Vegas airport, because that's where I went for 4 days to watch March Madness. And by the way, Jamie, all those delays and all the reviews at the end, those are really good if you're in the sports book, because it gives you time to say another bucket. And all that means is another bucket of beers gets put down in front of you. We had a group of 10, six of us, four friends, Castagnettis. I have never seen so many beers consumed from 9 o'clock in the morning until whatever. Okay, here's my David Aldridge moment. I'm in the Las Vegas airport getting ready to fly home. We're all just exhausted and, you know, the little Hudson News or whatever, and there are the books on the whatever. And two books, authors that we've had on the show, Anna North and Outlawed, which was that great one about the women's Jesse James gang, and Donnie Walton, The Final Revival of Opal and Neve.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Okay. All right. I'm going to
say, you know what they say? You can't drink all day if you don't start early in the morning.
It was the only good thing was every time we got a bucket of beers, we also got a bucket of waters. And interestingly, Devin was often the last one in the sports book at night. I'm not really sure why. So she had to sign out the receipt, the bill, and they give you an itemized account of how many beers, how many bottles of water.
Oh.
As the day went on, how many margaritas, how many, what did we call them? Vegas mules. Couldn't be drinking Moscow mules, Vegas mules.
Right.
And it was pretty horrifying. It was pretty horrifying. But it was great.
Corey, if you don't mind me asking, what's your place of choice to why? Where do you go?
Okay, so we all stayed. This is Brian, the travel agent extraordinaire. And this was a trip we planned 3 years ago, but it got canceled twice because of COVID. So we finally did it, and it was our friends, the Castagnettis, and we all stayed at the Bellagio.
Okay.
And in the Bellagio, you've got all the stuff and the casinos and the sports books and this and that. And there's a place called Lily's, L-I-L-Y. Mm-hmm. And you could, as we did, we reserved a whole table, kind of like a high table with bar stools all the way around.
Right.
And you reserve it from 9 in the morning until the game is over.
Wow.
And there's a minimum you have to meet. You know, you reserve it for free, but right. There's a minimum you have to meet. And all I know is I was usually one of the early ones to pack it in. I got a call from Devin on Friday or Saturday night going, okay, we haven't hit the minimum. The only thing that's left on the menu is the caviar. Should we go for it? So she went for it. But it is great. And Vegas is insane. Mm-hmm. And you're always happy to leave, but
yes.
You're happy to have been there. But it's insane. And there was nothing like the first weekend of March Madness. Nothing.
I will do that at some point when they come up with really, really next level immunizations.
We were also, okay, I realize COVID is very serious. We were all saying by the end of the weekend, if we didn't get COVID this past weekend, we're never getting COVID. Never.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I can't be around Vegas gambling people in that state.
and right people, people smoke in the casinos.
Oh, sure.
They still allow smoking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
I love Vegas. I love it. I can only do it 2 days at a time. Yeah. And they have to be weekdays. They can't
exactly.
be. I'm a Monday through Friday Vegas guy. 2 days at a time. That's it.
You said on Ted Lasso, like one day was okay, 2 days was great, 3 days was too much.
Yes.
Exactly. Best exactly. thing I saw, I did try to get out every morning before 9 a.m., get my steps in. And, you know, the Bellagio's got the big water thing with the fountains and everything else.
Right.
And
the
I'm
dancing
walking along,
fountains, yeah.
The dancing fountains. And I'm walking along and a guy has set up, I'm not going to say he was a homeless person. I don't know that he was, but he had set up his little station and he had some stuff and he had a little sign on an easel that said for sale, classified information. How great is that? I had no cash on me. if I had cash, I would have, because I wanted to take a picture. And he goes, no, not for free.
Because it's classified.
And I said, well, what's the classified information you're selling? And he said, it's classified. It was great. So, but that was my favorite thing.
Sounds like an answer you would have given at the Pentagon.
Exactly.
And you know why you had no cash? Because nobody takes cash anymore.
Disagree. Right? Disagree. In Vegas, there's still extraordinary amounts of cash still being used. And really? If you, I don't gamble, but if you're playing blackjack or you're, you know, whatever, craps, this, that, whatever, you get paid out in cash. You can get paid out in cash.
True.
The right? only the only bet I made the whole weekend was on Charles Leclerc in the F1 race on Sunday, which I
did
won.
Did he win? I don't follow F1. Did he win?
Oh, David, you've not watched Drive to Survive?
No.
It's the best.
I know. Everybody says
it's the best. Oh, it's the best. Okay, so we're 24 minutes in. Our author is there, although he's just a little black box right now.
Yeah, he's deciding whether he wants to hang around or not. I understand.
Well, I'm leaving. I'm saving some really good things for another show, but I have one serious question for David. Gary, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Welcome to Chatter and Books.
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, this is my first podcast talking about my first novel.
Excellent. Wow. You look like you're in an attic somewhere. Where are you?
I'm in my daughter's playroom.
There you go.
Excellent.
Which is where every Zoom parent ended up during the pandemic.
Exactly, because the sound is so good in your daughter's playroom.
You know, okay, we already said a lot of nice things about your book before you got here, so you'll have to listen to the podcast to hear.
There you go.
Oh, there's no doubt.
And we're going to be out in about 5 minutes, so this is going to be easy. Okay, but wait, David, very serious question, and I had so much planned for that first segment. What the hell? Why are we not hearing more about Brittany Griner and what is going on? Because that's insane.
Because she's a female basketball player.
Oh.
I mean, what else do you want me to say? She's the equivalent of James Harden. If James Harden were in a Russian prison facing, you know, how many years we don't know for essentially carrying a bong, you know, it'd be nonstop coverage on ESPN. But she's a woman and people don't care about women's sports the way they care about men's sports. So the media coverage is lacking. There is no media coverage. Now, Jamie, let me say this.
Devil's advocate, it couldn't possibly be that they're working behind the scenes and don't want to.
Of course they are. But they would. But we would be getting, you're right, Jamie, but we would be getting reports day in and day out that they are working behind the scenes. There's been nothing. I think you're right. And that's what I was going to say. They are working behind the scenes. The Players Association, the WNBA, I think the NBA is probably involved in this as well. Her family, obviously. And it's very delicate. And they can't have press conferences every afternoon. I understand that.
But also, we have zero leverage with Moscow at the moment. Because
And it's a particularly bad time to have to be in Russian prison for something that has
not any mood to help us out at all.
Right. But there's no doubt in my mind that if this were a male basketball player, the coverage would be completely different.
It would be completely different. Yeah.
You know, the people would be demanding, it would be on all of the, you know, fake outrage shows that are on sports TV these days where people yell at each other about made up stuff that they don't really care about, but they do it anyway. And it would be on, that would be, they'd be talking about it every day.
And I have no doubts that Brittany Griner, I was surprised when this came up a lot when we were in Vegas, in between the 30th and 40th buckets of beers, people said, well, what was she doing there? And why did she have this in her suitcase? This and that. And I said, first of all, these female basketball players spend a lot of time there because they played there a lot in the off season.
Right.
And I'd be shocked if she hadn't traveled extensively before. They chose this time to grab her.
I mean, look, you may be right. I mean, there may be something to that. I don't know. I have no particular belief that the Russians aren't above doing something like that. Of course they are. So
I bet Gary has an opinion on this.
I'm sure Gary does.
Gary, would you like to join the show?
Boy, I got a lot to say about that.
Occasionally we do talk about books on this show, and we'll talk a lot about your book, The Arm in the Fall.
But I mean, to your point, I mean, I think that definitely the timing is, you're right. We don't know, but to what you were just speaking of for 20 years, and I was one of those guys yelling and screaming on TV and radio, sometimes caring about what I said and sometimes not caring about what I said, which was really the reason I wrote the novel. And I can get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
To speculate, and speculate equals ratings, unfortunately, especially when it comes to sports radio. I mean, Rush is probably doing it at the time because you have a U.S. celebrity, if you will, and they'll do anything to get leverage at this time because, let's face it, Putin's on the ropes. Albeit they're stronger than the Ukraine, but I mean, he's got to be suffering economically. We know people of Russia. We know it's divided. We know that there are many people in Russia that don't want this war that Putin is being, you know, I mean, he's on the hot seat. Unfortunately, he still has the advantage over the Ukraine, but I think that he will do anything he can to gain an advantage with the West. And that's what I think this is about. Again, speculation. But back to women's basketball, I've had this discussion with a number of people. One of my good friends was the women's basketball coach at Holy Cross for like 30 years, Billy Gibbons. Great guy. And went to the NCAA tournament a number of times. Same thing with Gino Auriemma. They said they would never coach men again because women listen. And, you know, Billy at Holy Cross, you know, I still see some of his players today. Like one of them, you know, his players went on to become doctors and lawyers. And not that the men's program doesn't, but let's face it. I mean, men's basketball, D1 is generally geared to let's get to the NBA. When that's not really the situation, but he loved coaching women. And he said, I would never coach a men's team again. He had academic All-Americans. He won conference titles. But I still have Neanderthal friends of mine that say they will not watch a WNBA game. And I said, I think you're crazy. I mean, I know for the most part it's played below the rim, but fundamentally it can be more sound than the men's game. You know, you can see more pick and rolls, more screens, more strategy. Different. I loved watching the Holy Cross women's team play. You know, my buddies, they were so fundamentally sound. It's just such a team.
Yeah.
But also the other thing with women's sports, and I'm sorry, I'm not good at short answers. It all comes down to gambling, too. You know, I mean, even though NBA is not like football, but gambling will also drive interest in sports. And certainly there's a lot more interested in wagering in Vegas, as you pointed out, in the NBA than the WNBA.
Yep.
Well,
Gary said there was a lot of accuracy there. There's no doubt that. You know, you've got a bunch of moving parts here, the least of which, the most important of which is that Russia is currently at war with another country. Right. And so this is just, you know, everything kind of has to be viewed through that prism. And unfortunately, she was over there at that particular time. Right. But you're right. Look, where was I last weekend? Where was I this weekend? I was at Michigan watching the American University women's basketball team play in the tournament. Which won the Patriot League title, which Holy Cross was the regular.
Oh, yeah, season. Sure. Okay, sure. Yeah.
So, I get it. I mean, and I know, you know, from an interest, you're right. I think gambling does drive most of the interest in sports these days. But gambling's based on one thing, information. The more information you have, the better gambler you think you can be. So how do you get more information?
Right.
You talk about the sport more. Right. You're on TV more, you write about it more.
Yeah. I really thought the UConn women's team would change that. You know what I mean? I thought when they were like, I mean, you see Sue Bird in every commercial now.
Yes.
You
know? Yes.
I really thought that they were going to push it to the forefront. I think one of the problems that you mentioned, the information, the WNBA, they play in the off season because they're owned by a lot of the NBA teams.
Correct.
You know, so sometimes you have a WNBA game in the summer and it just doesn't have the same sizzle.
Yeah, but it doesn't. But it comes back to if it's talked about and written about a lot,
people, right.
There would be more interest in it. And there's a million reasons why people have said that they don't. You know, some are valid. Some are BS, to be honest with you. And they're based in sexism. But it's OK. That doesn't make them less real. So you have to kind of deal with them. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot of reasons, and I agree with you, Gary. There are a lot of reasons, and it does come down to gambling. But I do think as women's sports kind of are more mainstreamed, right, there will be more gambling on it, and then all of a sudden you'll see a lot more interest.
So we know one thing about gamblers is they'll gamble on anything.
Anything.
Correct.
By the way, for our 18 million listeners, welcome to Chatter on Basketball.
Yes.
The thing I had never seen before, but I saw in Vegas last weekend, this whole thing about first to 15, the entire place would go wild. Every game people were betting on the first to 15. And there were just huge, huge, huge cheers about that. But I'm gonna collapse Gary and Dave and just say, yes, if there was more information, people will bet on anything.
Yeah.
Right.
The piles.
Well, the girls game, the women's game. The women's game is a great product.
Yes, it's a great product. It's much more of a team sport.
Yeah, it's just more a team sport. You know, for whatever reason, it hasn't translated, but it's a great product. There's no doubt.
It will. Gary, would you like to talk about a book?
Yes, let's talk about a book. That's
why he's here.
Okay, so I'm going to have to collapse so many of my carefully crafted plane ride home from Vegas notes, Gary. Sports broadcaster, actor, and now an author.
Right.
Which of these did you really want to be when you were five, or did you want to be something else like an astronaut when you were five?
No, I was always going to, when I was five, I was going to be a sportscaster.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Who were your heroes? Yeah.
Well, like, I mean, Pat Summerall, Tom Brookshire. I mean, I remember watching, I grew up in a small town in Maine, and I remember watching Brett Musburger, Phyllis George, and Irv Cross every Sunday at one.
Wow.
And the Patriots were terrible. We only got one television station in Rumford, Maine, and it was CBS. So we had the NFC, and I saw the Giants. Oh, my God. Every week. Oh, my God. You know, it just drove me nuts. But that was that crew. And they were doing the pre and post game and then the halftime. And then they would do and it would be Summerall and Brookshire would do the games. And, you know, we had local television was really big at the time. You know, we had one guy in Bangor, Maine, George Hale, who I ended up working with later on, you know, who used to do all the high school basketball games on television and so forth. So I would say, yeah, at the age of five, it was definitely sportscasting.
OK, can I hang on for 1 second? Jamie first and then David, when you guys were five, we always ask our authors what they really wanted to be.
Yeah.
I've never asked these guys this. Jamie, when you were five, did you always want to be Walter Cronkite? And David, did you want to be, you know, whoever?
I didn't know that I was going to go into broadcasting until I was in my sophomore year in college. And when I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a conservationist and a naturalist. And that basically that was because that was what my mom told me she thought I should be. So I, you know, my mom says that. So,
yeah.
And, you know, I did like nature and stuff, but it wasn't until I was in college and took a public speaking class where they had this crazy new gizmo in the 1970s where you could record yourself and see yourself on TV that I thought, wow, I could do that.
I could do that. I could do that.
And then I majored in journalism and went into television. But had I known, I would have done a lot of things when I was younger that would have led to, you know, a more successful career.
Yeah, like substance and knowledge. David, 5 years old?
I have no idea what I was wanted to be when I was five. Potty trained. I don't know what I wanted to be when I was five. I was five.
I got one. When Charles Barkley.
No, I didn't. I had no particular. I had no particular designs of being an athlete. But
when you started to head toward journalism, did you have heroes?
Well, sure. I mean, I grew up here, so I read Warren Bernstein every day when I was eight.
Right.
You know, I didn't know all the words, but I knew it was important, right? So, you know, so you just read them, and sure, you go, wow, that seems like a pretty interesting thing to do. Like, they seem pretty cool. They help bring a president down. That seems worth looking into.
Someday, we're going to do an entire show on nothing but Woodward and Bernstein, and I'm going to bore you all to tears with my theory about how Woodward and Bernstein and Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, worst thing that ever happened in journalism.
Oh, sure. Because everybody wants to be a star.
Yeah. You used to want to investigate and educate and inform. Yeah, and then everybody wanted to be a star.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, then you could go, look, we could, then we could go to Fox News and we could go to, I mean, we could, you know, and then you know, when CBS went from having William Paley running CBS to, Tish, who said it's going to be a profit center. My feeling is as soon as Network News, which is about the time as Woodward and Bernstein became a profit center, it all went to hell.
Yeah. Right? And by the way, I blame Richard Nixon for all that. Okay. In your acknowledgments in this fabulous book, The Arm and the Fall, Gary, you thank a lot of people, the family, but you also said everyone should read Stephen King's book on writing. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I was on vacation with my wife, and I picked it up because I had a very traumatic experience writing when I was younger. And Joanne Kerr, who I also think in the book, my sophomore English teacher, helped me with that. For the longest time, I thought I was the typical broadcaster, and David can relate to this, where broadcasters don't write. They just read and look good. And the thought of, like, and the thought of writing a novel was very intimidating to me. And because I was very much a daydreamer, and, you know, my first draft of anything was just, I mean, vomit. I mean, you know, like, you just can't, what do you, you know, I was the only one that could understand it. And I remember writing in high school all these crazy thoughts, but I couldn't organize them. I couldn't get it. And Mrs. Kerr was like, okay, let's make it simple. You know, intro. And it sounds elementary, but when you have the type of mind that I have, and I think if you read the book, you realize the type of mind I have.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Kim. Yeah, I'm a big daydreamer. You know, I love over the top. I'm a big, you know, I remember, you know, so I needed to organize my thoughts. And so I wrote screenplays because I'm very visual. Uh-huh. And then when I read Stephen King's book, and my vocabulary sucks, and I try to improve my vocabulary daily. I can't tell you how many times I look up the same word. I just do. It's just the way my brain works. But like, I would, like, David knows the guys that I work with. I mean, like, I'm doing a podcast tomorrow with Bob Ryan. Like, Ryan, Shaughnessy, yeah. Lane Montville, I mean, right. Jackie McMullen, I mean, Barnacle. I mean, all these giants in Boston, right, who are writing. And I would just, like, I could never do that, you know? Mm-hmm. So when I read Stephen King's book, Stephen King said, keep it simple, stupid, KISS format, you know? Tell mm-hmm. the story, make it enjoyable. If you can say it in one word as opposed to two, say it in one word, you know? I mean, I still give my friend Chris Gasper of The Globe, who always puts a word in there I have to look up, and I call him up, and I say, Chris, it's not about you.
Yeah,
enjoys yeah. that. He plays, I mean, I love Gasper dearly. He plays that game. And so when I would first write, I would go to the thesaurus and I would try to look up a fancy word instead of using the word that naturally came to my mind. And Stephen King said, no, 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 no. It's the story. It's the characters. It what comes out of your brain. And that's when I had the confidence to write the book, The Arm in the Fall.
Okay.
Can I tell a quick story here about broadcasters who didn't?
Yes, please do. And you know, in 5 seconds, I've been in your ear going rap, rap.
Okay, so here's the story. So when I was at CNN, there was this producer of some of our talk shows on Sunday, and he said he was going to quit and write a novel. And we all looked at each other and, like, you know, we're broadcasters. He's going to write a novel, and, you know, to give you the Paul Harvey version of the rest of the story. That person was Daniel Silva.
Wow.
Yeah, so we thought, like, oh, he's going to go write a novel. Good luck with that. And yeah.
Well, I could just tell you, you know, just tell the story you want to tell.
That's okay. So, Gary, why this story? I'm going to do quarterback, suicide, murder, Russian right. mobsters, cheating spouses.
Don't forget the cult leader, the shady cult leader.
The cult leaders, yeah.
Okay, I was at a point in time in my career. This was when Tom Brady was accused of Deflategate, and we were at the Super Bowl in Arizona. David, were you there? I don't think you
I was not. No, sir.
You're not there. Okay. So the Deflategate came out, and I was kind of getting tired of my job a little bit. I mean, I love sports, but, it's yelling, it's – you know, God bless Kornheiser and Wilbon. You know, they've made a fortune, but that's really what it is now. I mean, mm-hmm. Felger and Maserati in my hometown of Boston. I mean, it doesn't matter. They have fantastic ratings, and it's a very opinionated business. And I was really becoming frustrated with what we were doing. And then when Brady came on, the whole deflating thing started, which, again, was allegedly a microscopic amount of air coming out of a football, which does not make a difference in how you throw the football. It makes no difference. It makes no difference, okay? And it was, and I got up in my morning in the hotel room in Phoenix, and it was A1 on ABC News, CNN, CBS, NBC, Fox, and I saw Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room talking about this, and I said, Armageddon is upon us. And then that's when I really went crazy. And then I said, what would happen if the quarterback was murdered? So while I've taken my job seriously, I don't take sportscasters or sports celebrities seriously. We're very lucky to be able to have done what we've done.
Right.
So when I wrote this book, it was, okay, what would happen at the Super Bowl, the 4 days before the Super Bowl, the quarterback is found dead. So he falls from the team hotel the Thursday before the Super Bowl, and he's dead in the parking lot. Was it suicide? Was it murder? Who did it? The crazy ass owner. Okay. Was it the actress wife who's about to become divorced? Was it the crazy cult leader that had him under his thumb? You know, who was it? The Russian mobster who becomes involved in a hit? All these crazy things. And what happens is the main character, Jerry Cushing, who's an over the hill sportscaster, becomes a media star because he starts tweeting and getting into social media, and he becomes involved with a local detective who he gets all the information from. So Jerry, who, like, if you will, is, I don't know, for Washington, it would be like, and I know, I believe he's no longer with us, like George Michael, right? Or Warner Wolf, all these guys that were big in the 70s and 80s, right? Who, you know, later on were put out to pasture. He becomes this huge social media star because he's getting this information from this detective about the dead quarterback. And it just blows up and blows up and blows up. And Jerry and this detective, think Paul Giamatti and Jennifer Lopez, have to find out who murdered the quarterback by the end of the Super Bowl. And it's a bit of a satire against our media. A lot of it is. I mean, and social media.
So I have a confession. I have two confessions to make about the book. One is the Cush, or Cush, as he prefers to be called, is my favorite character. And the second one is, the reason for that is that's as far as I got in the look inside the first chapter.
That
they have on Amazon, where you can read the first chapter.
That's okay.
It's a good first chapter.
It does hook you right away, and you can tell right away you're going to have a ton of fun reading this book.
Okay, how many real life inspirations for your characters in the book, Gary?
Oh, a ton. But I also, you know, like I also wanted to earn my stripes. You know, the quarterback. Okay, obviously, people. You know, the quarterback's left-handed. So I took all of the quarterbacks that I've covered and I've seen. Stabler was left-handed. You know, Brunell was left-handed. You know, there's Brady, who has, you know, the crazy exercise guru, TB12, right? So, you know, Guerrero. So you have Guerrero, you know. Okay, so my guy's left-handed. He was a number one draft pick. He has a religious guru that has him under his thumb. So it's kind of like all these guys come together, you know, and I'll tell you, there's one little story, if I may be a little risque,
Go right ahead.
Okay. There's a story about a Hall of Fame quarterback that made the rounds that used to like to have relations with his mistresses in strange places, right? So I put that in the book. And one of the strange places in the book is the St. Louis Arch. And that's but I had heard it's on St. Louis. Maybe David heard it, but it was in other places that this guy, who everybody knows, was a little kinky. So I took that and I put it in the book.
Sure.
Okay, I might be revealing too much here, but I don't think the story you just told was that risque. But I will say in the book, The Arm of the Fall, There are sex scenes.
Yeah.
There's a body language, lot of references. And again, in your acknowledgement, you very nicely thank your wife, who forgave you for, you know, you forgot to pick up the milk because you're sitting in the car writing something in your novel.
Right.
And your kids, how did they react to that aspect of this book?
And my wife swears.
Paul Giamatti, Jennifer Lopez, I totally get it. I was going to ask you who you envisioned in these roles.
Jennifer Lopez.
But I totally get that.
Like the character, Rocky Suarez, is like, you know, Rocky Suarez is like 50 years old. Jennifer Lopez is what, 52, 50? That woman is my hero. I mean, she is a corporation. I mean, I'm dead serious. Like, I look at her, she controls everything. Movies, music, reality shows. I mean, she's a mogul. And I think she's awesome. So like Rocky Suarez as a cop is kind of the same way. You know, she does her own thing. My wife swears more than me. My wife was not offended at all. My 77-year-old grandmother, Tori, my 77-year-old grandmother, remember the scene in the breakdown lane?
Yes.
My 77-year-old grandmother loved it. She thought it was hilarious.
Excellent.
And I will just tell everybody that is there's some sex here. And it's funny because I'm on my second novel and it involves the NBA, but for some reason it's not as guy or sexual oriented. When I started this, it was something about football, something about the scene, something about that just drove it towards violence and sex. Maybe it was something about the NFL, you know? I didn't intend that to happen. It was just like writing about football, masculinity, a very powerful woman. That kind of all just fell into place.
Yeah. I have friends, a couple, I won't name them, but they have this game they play, which is, would you forgive me if I slept with fill in the blank?
Right.
Right. You know, somebody so spectacular. Would you forgive
Claude
me?
Claude just bailed out of this, by the way.
Claude right. just gave up. They both picked Jennifer Lopez. They worked out. They both picked Jennifer
I think
Lopez.
She's awesome. I mean, she's awesome. Just, and I'm not really a fan of her songs. Like, I couldn't name one Jennifer Lopez song.
No, but she's I just, a total like, pro. Think of her.
I go,
yeah, she's an incredible pro. Okay, so social media does play a big role in all of this and how it impacted right. the business. David and Jamie, mm-hmm. how has social media affected your work? And do you love it, hate it, accept it?
Well, I hate it, of course, as any sentient person. Yeah. I hate it. You know, as I've said this before about all of this Twitter and all of this, is that when I started, when Gary started, when Jamie started, when you started, we all had time to think.
Yeah. Sure.
And what this 24/7 news cycle has done is completely eliminated the ability to think.
Yeah. Yep.
And with thinking comes nuance and subtlety and all those things that make you a better writer and make the story that you write or the broadcast that you do better, because you don't say this is A and this is B and that's it. Yeah. You say here's A, but here's why A or here's how A. And then you can say, and then there's people who don't like A and here's why they don't like A. You can't do that now. You can't. When I was at ESPN, Chris Mortensen, who was brilliant, great news person, you know, broke NFL stories left and right forever and ever, was one of the first guys about Deflategate.
He was the first guy.
Yeah. So Mort said, well, because I had never done TV before, and he said, you can only give him the headline. That's all you can give him.
Right.
You can't even give him a lead graph. Just give him the headline. That's all you have time for. And so you have to kind of work that way.
Well, I mean, I look at, you know, if you look at, I mean, I just look at like Stephen A. I mean, Stephen A's a rock star, but I mean, he used to cover the Sixers for the Inquirer, right? I mean, he was like a beat guy.
I'm a psychologist, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, you have to make a choice now. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut anybody off. I'm sorry, Jim.
No, that's good.
But I mean, you have to make a choice now. Am I going to be an entertainer or am I going to be a journalist? And entertainers make money. That's the reality.
Yeah, pays the bills. Jamie?
When I started, when I was at CNN, when, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagraph or whatever it is were born, I was told, you know, I need to get on there and establish a social media presence, and I need to get as many followers as I can. And I got into the game and I started doing this stuff, and I'm, you know, immediately felt inadequate because, of course, your social worth was measured by how many Twitter followers you had.
Right.
And, So about a couple of years ago, I just quit it all. I quit tweeting. By the way, you can follow me at Jamie J. McIntyre on Twitter. You'll be very disappointed because I haven't tweeted in at least 3 years.
Right.
And it just, you know, this affirmation, to seeking affirmation from total strangers and comments from Facebook friends, and you can see this on the podcast by making air quotes with my fingers. It doesn't make any sense at all. So I just do my work and I don't worry about social media anymore. So I use Facebook to keep up with family. That's it.
I honestly don't remember where I read this, but some years ago, I used to give credit to whoever came up with this line. But the joke is, so why do these social media platforms have funny names like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat? Because narcissism is too hard to spell. How great is that? Okay, there are so many twists and turns in this fabulous book, Gary, The Arm in the Fall. And you really got to stay with it to the end. Easy to do, but stay with it to the end. Did you know the ending?
I did.
Oh, you
did. I did. And I don't know when it came to me. I honestly don't. I started writing this in a hotel room in Phoenix during that Super Bowl. And I don't know. I'm not sure when it came. I would say pretty early on, you know, because I think I did an outline first, you know, probably, you know, maybe a 10-page summary type of treatment type of deal, and then an outline. But I knew where it was going. Uh-huh. Yeah, I knew where it was going.
Okay, so David, before we had you on, Gary, David was telling us he's really bummed because with your book, because he had written 60 pages, David?
60
pages.
Still around somewhere.
In which a quarterback gets murdered. David, do you know the end of the story that you will finish?
Yes, I know who did it, yes. I just have to get from
it Gary by any chance? Because it looks like he's killed your book.
Yeah, my book's dead. I have no chance. I'll be, you know, just criticized and as derivative and copying and stealing. And so I can't write the book now. Thanks a lot. Well,
somebody said there are only eight plot lines anyway, right?
That's true.
So you just
the hard thing with fiction, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, even if you read all the Clancy books and the Grisham books and the, that's, you know, that, you know, fiction is a hard sell anyways now, unless you're Stephen King. You know, everybody wants to read what Wickersham has to say about Brady and Belichick.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's the hard thing about fiction is you got to, you know, there's only so many ways you can go. Yeah. So I don't know.
I have a question, and I've noticed this. And this was not true 2.5 years ago when we started this show. How come when somebody writes fiction now, they always write, or they have the title, and then it says a novel? Why do you have
that's
to...
That's a good question. I publish this independently.
Uh-huh.
So the graphic artist I talked to,
it's very cool.
That's what he suggested. And I think that people, they just want to differentiate that it's fiction from the beginning, I guess.
Because otherwise they might think that there was a quarterback who got murdered.
I mean, the sports thing, the frustrating part that I've had is that when I tried to write and I would talk to literary agents, they said, well, you've been in sports, write about sports. I mean, I did the Celtics pre and post game show. You know, I knew Tommy. I knew all those guys and Mike and better on the team. I've been better on the Patriots. I did their pre and post game show on radio. So I knew a lot of people, but I just was not interested in sitting. And I love them dearly. Like, I just wasn't interested in sitting down with Troy Brown and telling his life story. That I need, you know, as you'll read the book, as Tori knows, I need helicopters, I need gunfights, and I need sex. You know, I mean, I need something. So I need something to hit him over the head.
When you told the story about left-handed quarterbacks and then the quarterback having sex in exotic places, I was running through my brain of left-handed quarterbacks, and I stopped on Tim Tebow. And I thought, no, it couldn't. It definitely wasn't.
Does anybody really believe that, though?
I can drag Tebow off the. Well, you know, I went to the University
of Florida. When Tebow said that he was a virgin, I was like, come on, dude.
Well, I went to the University of Florida, and at the University of Florida, there's a big structure in the middle of the campus called Century Tower. And the story that they tell you at the University of Florida is that every time a virgin graduates from the University of Florida, a brick falls off Century Tower. I can tell you, of course, it's still intact. There are.
That's great.
did graduate from Florida, so
there you go.
I just throw that out there.
He was once very nice to my children when they were very little. So
he's a. I love Tebow.
Oh, he's a sweet guy.
He's a very nice guy.
Okay.
But he's a better man than me.
All right, Gary. The book is The Arm in the Fall. It's fabulous.
Thank you, Troy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for writing it.
Yes. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for being with us. Really encourage everybody else to go out there and get this book. And we hope you'll come back with the next one.
Well, the next one is it's taking place in the NBA.
There we go.
Murder in the NBA.
and when David writes his book about a quarterback knee murder, you'll have to come back on as a panelist and help us interview.
No problem.
Exactly. Okay, great. All right.
Thank you.
Here is our close, everybody. So we are off next week. We come back early April with Dan Pink. Dan Pink, who is fabulous. We had him on with his last book, which was called When, all about time. And now he's got one, which is incredible, called The Power of Regret. He's very smart. We will all be smarter after we have Dan Pink on. Claude, do you want to give a pitch for people to sign up for Patreon?
I do. And before I do
that. But you got it rock and rolling.
Before I do that, according to the internet, you are right. Six word story bed, for sale, baby shoes never worn. Six, not seven, but you were close, so we'll give you points for it. Patreon.com/chatteronbooks. We'll get off next week, but the following week, you'll be able to watch the show virtually live. Get extra audio, all kind of bonus content. And we're still trying to figure out how to do this virtual book club, but we'll figure it out. But again, patreon.com/chatteronbooks.
Excellent. Right. Thank you. David, thank you. Jamie, thank you. Gary, thank you.
Thank you. Nice to talk with you.
Stay well. And everybody, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Guests on Chatter on Books are entitled to be entered into a raffle to win a home version of Chatter on Books, which includes a deck of laminated playing cards, a colorful game board, and an hourglass-style timer. Only one entry per person in case of duplicate prizes. Ties will be awarded. Must be present to win.